Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clarke. I'm still at the Lawless Convention in Bristol, and it's hello again to Giles Wright. Giles, welcome back to the book club.
Hey, we're in Bristol together.
Bristol again, second year in a row. And also, today, after Richard Sheaf earlier on, you become the second person this weekend to earn their fifth star on the Judge Dredd badge for your fifth appearance today.
Awesome. We're both approaching Pete Wells levels.
Yes, exactly. Pete Wells is on 8, but...
who could ever top that?
Yeah. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out some way to sort of like acknowledge the fifth star.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not it'll be stick on gold stars to put on your coaster, I don't know. But anyway.
Well, I see across, this is obviously an audio podcast, there's no visual element to it, but I can see that Eamon's wearing a very tasty Mega City Book Club t-shirt.
Yes, got the t-shirt on today. Yes, I've got the t-shirt, which so I'm...
Could that be unlocked by a sixth appearance?
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Who knows? Anyway, now, you are my go-to guy for an eclectic mixture of Judge Dredd stories. It's become your thing, in a way, isn't it, on this podcast?
Indeed, yeah.
And this year, you've not disappointed me again. So tell us, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about a collected edition called When Judges Go Bad. And this is a Rebellion release. But if you look at the back cover, you'll see the prices are in two currencies, American dollars and Canadian dollars. So this was only released in the North American market, and it was released in 2012. In, I think, about 4 months before the release of the Dredd movie.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking this was, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure this was a Rebellion's entry into the North American market in anticipation of their big summer release to try and generate a bit of some sales and some more interest and some, you know, some more hype for the movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that might explain why I found it. I had to get it on the secondhand market.
Quite, yeah. I don't... I mean, it's available. Me too. I got it on ebay.co.uk, I think. But yeah. I don't think it's ever officially been released in this market that we're sitting in now. Bristol and the wider environs.
So here we have... We've both got the same slim paperback trade collection of Judge Dredd stories from, as you say, from 2012. Written by John Wagner and Mark Miller. Artists, right, Chris Weston, Will Simpson, Greg Staples, Nick Percival, Steve Yowell, John Burns, Paul Marshall, Dave Taylor. Lettered, I think, throughout by Tom Frame. There's some colours in there by Pete Doherty, who's downstairs, and Dondi Cox, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in... I think we go right back to 1989, but we come up to about 2005 in these stories.
That's right. The final one, which is they're all printed chronologically, and the final one is, yeah, Prog 2006.
Right.
So what is that? The last week of the year 2005.
Right. So here we are. We've got this collection. As I say, you're my go-to guy for eclectics, and this one is called When Judges Go Bad. Why this one, Giles? Why have you picked this?
So it's a really interesting collection of... stories where, in fact, Dredd is a supporting character in his own strip. It's all mostly focused on other judges. And what I really like about this is they're all stories about, I mean, the answer's in the title. They're all different judges that go bad in different ways, but they go bad in really interesting ways. There are no two stories that are quite the same. And within this as well, I mean, you know, this is a comic book that's, you know, written between, as you say, the 1980s and the mid-noughties. And yet you get, I mean, okay, I know there's only one qualified doctor on this podcast, Eamon, and that is not me. But if you allow me to put on my COD psychiatrist lab coat, or maybe it will be a COD psychiatrist tweed jacket and bow tie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'll suggest that there is elements of messiah complex in here, god complex, exaggerated entitlement syndrome. I had to look that one up. And a really, really interesting case of schizophrenia in one of the two-part stories. There are two-part stories where it's really interesting because one of the personalities is dominant in the first, and then in the sequel, the other personality is taken over. So, I mean... The writing in here is just extraordinary. It's not just judges being naughty or being criminal. And I mean, again, it's a testament to great writing from two big names in the 2000 AD stable. But also, it's indicative of what you can achieve with Dread. You can go from high camp to, you know, whatever, high drama, terror even. And I'd suggest if another comic imprint did this, DC, Marvel, Image, Dark Horse, if they sort of scoured their archives and came up with when capes go bad or when heroes go bad, I'd suggest that if they had 8 stories, I bet they'd all be the same. It would, the motivating factor for each of them going bad would either be, I don't know, jealousy or revenge, and it would end in a punch up, and maybe somebody would die or they'd go to jail. It'd be the same story beats. It would just be, you'd insert Iron Man or Savage Dragon or, you know, whatever, Mrs. Marvel. Whereas here, there are a couple of violent endings, but they're all very different from each other. The way that some of the judges accept their fate, the way that they see themselves in the world, their animus, their motivation for their actions is all... There's 8 different stories, and they're 8 totally different stories. Great collection.
Okay, so it is a great collection, actually. I really enjoyed reading it. The first 2 stories you've sort of referred to already, let's get those.
Yeah.
Crazy Barry and Little Mo, and the sequel is Banana City. And this is the one which you refer to as like a genuine schizophrenic, you know, character who's a judge.
Yeah.
Just fill us in quickly on sort of detail of that one.
So, yes, this is, as you say, the first one is called Crazy Barry, Little Mo. And the Barry is Barry Curtin, who's a mega city judge. He's been on the streets for 15 years, something of a veteran, or around about 15 years, I think. And he is, well, Dread at the very end of the story, the very end of the sequel says... You know, it's a pity because you're a pretty good judge. You know, he's held in quite high regard. He's a little bit more violent than the average megacity judge. His kill rate is slightly above the average. His, you know, broken bone rate of perps is slightly above the average, but it's within parameters. What Justice Department doesn't know is that there is an imaginary blue demon living inside Barry's head called Mo, who... directs his actions. And yeah, as I said, in the first part, so the first part is a 3-parter, it's set in Mega City 1. And at the very end of it, Judge Curtin, Barry, has a showdown with Dredd and bests Dredd. And then says to Dredd, well, I think it's one of the greatest lines in here, is he says, you know, I'm really sorry for what I'm about to do to you. And he clocks Dredd with his gun, cold cocks him. But you know, Mo's telling me what to do, and, you know, I've got to give in to him every once in a while. Otherwise, he just nags, right? Fast forward 6 weeks, and we're in Banana City. The first time we see, we're in Ciudad Barranquilla, Banana City, where Judge Curtin has taken up residence. And he is now totally given in to Mo, and he's just going wild, and he's just a vehicle for this blue demon inside his head. And Mo is just directing every one of his actions and just say, hey, take this guy out, give this guy justice, you know, be brutal, put a bullet in this guy. And Barry is not even hesitating. So it's really lovely, that flip. They're both written by Wagner. It's the same character. There is not a lot of time between the end of Crazy Barry, Little Mo and the first episode of Banana City. And yet, boom, he's broken, totally broken.
And you mentioned parameters, because one of our parameters for judges, the way we judge judges is by Dredd, in a way. He is like the gold standard.
Yeah.
And there are fantastic moments in this collection. We've talked about this, I think, in previous years, that, you know, we like to see, in a way, Dredd figuring stuff out. And there's fantastic moments when Dredd just notices something slightly... you know, is at the boundaries of acceptability. Mm-hmm. And he sort of, you can almost see him filing away and thinking, I might need to just keep an eye on this.
Yes,
And what I put in our notes was, of course, if we go back to 1977 or possibly even 1976, we've got John Wagner and Pat Mills coming up with the concept of Dredd. obviously they'll need Carlos Esquerra as well, but you're coming up with the concept of a sort of vaguely fascist super cop, you know, science fiction cop in the future. And I always wonder, did they ever imagine that particularly John would go on to use this character in the setting to examine so much of society? Because this book, to me, has a close look at sort of policing and how we judge yep. our police, or in this case, the judges. Is this something that we see as a feature of John Wagner's work throughout, do you think? This sort of... because you call it laying track as well, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was your expression.
No, well, possibly.
I took it from you. Yeah, it's... I mean, obviously, Dredd is the longest-running continuous character in the comic. So you would hope that a character that's been written continuously for 47 years has become way more sophisticated and, you know, has matured... And a writer as good as, you know, Wagner and Rob Williams and Michael Carroll can explore different aspects of policing. And of course, Rob has just wrapped up A Better World, which is, you know, probably the ultimate. You know, it's what would it be like if Megacity didn't have judges, or maybe judges were just in the background and they were called like firemen. You know, they're called when there's an absolute emergency, but otherwise you don't see them. So yeah, it's odd because, you know, on one hand I'd say, you know, just because it's been around for 45 years, you kind of expect this, and maybe if Flesh had been around for 45 years, you might get, you know, exploration of something else, you know, I don't know, vegetarianism or something. But then Nemesis the Warlock came fully formed in book one as an analogue for the Catholic Church and the strictures of very tough, you know, small C conservative outlook on life. And the same with, you know, the same with another couple of strips, the long running strips. I mean, I don't know, Slane was, I don't know, does that sort of deal with religion? But Dredd, no, I mean, you know, we remember the first 2 years of Dredd. He's kind of, hey, that's Judge Dredd. He's well loved by the people. And you know, he's getting applauded wherever he goes, and even if he puts a bullet in somebody's back for jaywalking, 60% of the crowd salutes him. And it's become way more cynical since then. So no, I don't think so. I think there's probably an alternate universe where Dredd was like Ace Trucking, that it lasted for two books and it's just not thought about anymore. But just, you know, having the powerhouse of writers that are behind Dredd, then they can make him sing for 47 years and then use that to explore all of the things that you've just highlighted.
It's fascinating stuff. We'll come back to John Wagner and Dredd's world and the universe in a moment. The next two stories, of course, we get a change of writer. Yeah. We get Mark Miller on Crime Prevention and The Man Who Broke the Law. And this is, I'm going to guess, Progs 872, Progs 968 to 969. So it's in that period where John Wagner was perhaps possibly stepping away from the character, and various of the young hotshot writers were filling in, weren't they? Yeah. Or rather, they were stepping in. What did you make of Mark Miller's stories in the collection?
So I'm guessing, once again, because this is aimed at the American market in 2012, I'm presuming that Rebellion picked these two stories so that they had a recognisable name in that market. And, yeah, I mean, I think they're both substandard. And I don't think I'm being necessarily controversial about this, and I don't think Mark Miller himself would disagree with me. He, this is how his career started, and I think he looks back on his Dredd stuff, and he says, oh, it wasn't very good. I've heard him say that a number of times. Now, of the two stories, one of them is called Crime Prevention. It's a one-parter. And if I'm going to be really tough, my review of it would be, have you ever seen that movie Minority Report? Well, it's that, but not done very well. Now, saved by some sensational Nick Percival art, really, really is very good. Now, the second story, which is called The Man That Broke the Law, is a bit of a curio. I think it is a grade A idea. It's a fabulous, fabulous concept for a story with a terrible execution. So the story is that an entire sector, House of Judges, kind of lets loose. and they let loose in very different ways. There's a couple of, you know, it opens up with a couple of judges doing a bust at a nightclub, and they decide rather than do the bust, they're going to hit the dance floor and start booging together. And then, hey, I've always fancied you. Oh, I've always fancied you. Let's get together. And then another judge starts graffitiing the sector house. And then it gets a bit weird. Then some other judges kind of kill some citizens, and somebody tries to blackmail the entire sector, threatening to blow it up. And there's some other pranks. So it's not just, you know, each of the judges goes kind of loose in very different ways. And we as the audience don't know why this is, and Dredd doesn't know. So we're kind of investigating with Dredd. And then in the second part, the solution is just handed to him. The protagonist is handed to him on a silver plate, and he wraps up the story. And then there's about 500 loose ends, because we don't know what happened to the judges who committed these crimes. Do they all go to Titan? Do they get let up with a slap on the wrist? Do some of them go to Titan? Do some of them go to jail? Do they get reprogrammed? Do they get some therapy? It's really, really poorly done. And I wonder whether if Miller had 3 episodes to do it, it might have been a good story. Because I think there's a very good story in there somewhere. There's a really good story in there somewhere. But it just wraps so quickly and it's so unsatisfying that, I don't know. It's very weird. That said, I'm glad it's in this collection. I don't think grand, wonderful failures like this should be swept under the carpet. I think there's room for these type of stories to exist. And I'm glad. It's the first time I'd read Crime Prevention before. First time I'd read The Man Who Broke the Law, because I don't think I was reading the prog at the time. And yeah, I've gone back to it 2 or 3 times and sort of realize different things. And you know, there's the judge, it turns out to be a judge who's freed the sector house, and the method that he uses and his reasoning behind it is really interesting. His acceptance of justice when Dredd confronts him is really interesting, but there's just so many loose ends, and it's a flabby story, and it's Steve Yeol art, but it's not Steve Yeol at his best. You know, it's not Zenith Book 3 Steve Yeol. It's kind of Steve Yeol, you know, for dialing it in, which doesn't really help in the way that Nick Percival can sort of bring something, you know, manage to grab something out of the other Mark Miller story. But yeah, great. Hey, grand failures that have got a kernel of something in there should be studied. And I think it's,
It's slightly like the Blockmania story, done in 2 parts and affecting judges, isn't it? And also it features the other story it reminded me of, because Dredd goes in alone at one point in the story, which is like that Dredd cleaning up the punks story, which, you know, Brian Bolland is downstairs. I think Bolland artwork on that. And you can see Dredd going in alone against a bunch of megacity punks, but Dredd going in alone against a group of judges who should be nearly on a level with him. It seemed to me like, no, I don't think Dredd would actually do that. You know?
I mean, he did it in City of the Damned.
Right.
When he went into the Hill Street Blues house and, yeah, you know who I am. Get out of my way. But I suppose they were self-interested demon judges, weren't they? Yeah, in this one, yeah, it's, especially when they're thinking the way they're thinking. I don't know why they would want to allow Dredd in. Yes.
Yeah.
There's, whatever, 375 judges not standing in his way.
As you say, maybe he needed another issue to actually do the story properly.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's those stories. Then we move on. We've got, in the rest of the book, there's another sort of two-parter or a book, a story with a sequel. This is Bad Manners and then Rotten Manners.
Yeah.
And again, we have another judge on the crooked, as it were.
Yeah.
And again, a slightly different take on it.
Yeah, he's almost like, again, he's quite similar to Judge Curtin, Barry, Crazy Barry, in as much that he's otherwise a good judge. I mean, good, I don't know, you know, quote, air quotes, good judge. He's otherwise a good judge, but he's just, you know, the Justice Department studies his figures and they say, well, he's a little bit more violent than the average, but again, within acceptable parameters. And again, this is something that's so good about all of the stories in here. The naughty judges, bad naughty rather than bad sort of substandard, the naughty judges don't think they're doing anything necessarily wrong. They are not actually going against the precepts of the Academy of Law. Even Barry, who is, you know, totally off of the deep end, doesn't get involved with civilians. He's just being very brutal with skiz dealers, you know, other various punks. Same with Judge Manners. Okay, there is one thing where he has to take out a witness, but he's just trying to keep a lid on the city, and he's not enriching himself. He does something else later on in one of the stories. He does bed one of the citizens that whose life he saved earlier. So he's taking advantage a little bit, but you know, he's not. None of these judges are actually. I don't know. I don't think they could see themselves as really breaking the law. I mean, and I would think, you know, if we look at all the judges that have been bad in the history of Mega City 1, Judge Pin, Judge Carroll, even though they were two deranged judges, they thought they were, you know, enforcing the law. Judge Julio, Judge Edgar, who's the guy from the Fenucci tapes, Judge Sladek. All of these judges that have been bad are actually just, hey, listen, this guy was a killer. He's a blackmailer. That's why I put a bullet in his head. Maybe I should have put him in an ICQ, but you know, the world is better off without him. It's only really, I can only really think of two judges that are bad for bad's sake, and that's Judge Gibson, Mutie the Pig, and of course, you know, the other gold standard, Rico. Apart from that, I can't really identify, I can't remember a judge that was bad and went to Titan. That actually was trying to enrich themselves or break the law. There's that one guy at the end of the pit who is Galen DeMarco's ex, whose name I can't even remember. He was such a putz. But yeah, it's so the vast majority of them are just, you know, hey, I'm more brutal than I should be, but really I'm just trying to keep a lid on these things, you know.
By this stage in John Wagner's writing career, I think I've noticed that this is where he's already dispensed with thought bubbles. Which I think are in the early story, you see some thought bubbles, but by this stage you don't get thought bubbles. We get to read Dredd from his words and actions, and in the case of two great artists, from the facial expressions. Because again, I think in this story there's wonderful moments of Dredd noticing things.
Yes,
there's right. also a misdirect by Manners, where Manners has deliberately laid a trail, knowing that Dredd will sort of notice and that will lead him where Manners wants to go rather than where Dredd will necessarily go. But once again, you know, as Dredd as the gold standard and a bit of Dredd procedural we love as well, just seeing him examine evidence and just seem to notice stuff. I love all that, basically.
Mm. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Towards the end of the book, we get two more stories. We get... Judging Ralphie, again, we get a completely different type of misbehaviour.
Amazing.
In that basically here we've got a failed judge, a failed cadet.
Yeah. And we've also got the ultimate laying track story. I mean, when we talked a couple of years ago about Brothers of the Blood, I said how much I enjoyed Wagner picking up Vienna from Prague, 116, I think. And then he picked her up 25 years later. I believe Ralphie appeared three progs later. I think he's in the tale of from Walter's scrapbook in prog 119. I think I'm sort of something like that, which is referenced in this story. And then, yeah, so this is when John and Alan were trying anything out. You know, let's send Dredd to the moon. Let's send him to the Cursed Earth. Let's send him here. Let's send him there. Let's give him a niece. And then they... had this thing, let's give him a sort of, you know, let Judge Dredd be a mentor to this little Ralphie character who's an orphan, and he looks up to Judge Dredd and he wants to go to the academy, and Dredd pulls some strings and Ralphie fails because he's too keen or he's an idiot. And then we see, I mean, this is picked up 25, 30 years later, here comes Ralphie again. And it's wonderful the way that John just invented this character. Never visited him again. So clearly he was substandard, and it was quite preposterous, you know, thing that Dredd would have a mentee that he visited every week, quote unquote. But it's obviously been bubbling in John's head for all those decades. And he pulls out a story called Judging Ralphie, which is crazy, amazing, really on the edge. This kid is so entitled and so bitter that he has taken somebody's identity during Necropolis, fashioned a judge's uniform out of, I don't know what, maybe you found it, and just goes on a killing spree. But again, it's a weird killing spree where he has convinced himself he's dispatching crims and delivering justice. It's amazing. And then the ending, when, again, like I said, most of these stories are Dredd as a side character in his own strip. When Dredd tips up and then confronts Ralphie, it's an amazing confrontation. And Dredd is not emotional about these things, and Ralphie is. You know, it's kind of the ultimate. You're all you want to hit me with is emotion, and I just don't care. You know, you're a failure, and I don't care about your nonsense of I gave you a chance, you blew it, and that's the end of it. Oh, but you should have given me another chance. No, here's what you're gonna get.
It's astonishing because we get Dave Taylor doing the faces of Judge Ralphie at the end. Mm. And Ralphie, as you say, his face contorted by emotion, screaming at Dredd. And yes. Dredd, as ever, Dredd grim, Dredd impassive, Dredd just dispensing justice. You were a mistake, you know. Yes. I tried.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to mention the last story, looking at the wider picture again, and I noted this when I was reading this, that of course, we're always slightly worried about real world stuff and about our police.
Mm.
And it's particularly, I think, well, let's say there've been a number of high profile cases in recent years on both sides of the Atlantic that have made us even more concerned about it.
Mm.
Do you see Wagner in particular commenting on that in some of the stories he writes about Dredd's world and what is effectively their police department?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Mike Mulcher, who you had on the podcast talking about I Am the Law, which came out last year, mentions two of these stories in I Am the Law. He does mention Crazy Barry Little Moe, and he really heaps a lot of scorn on that final line of Dredd, which is, I mean, it's not too much of a spoiler. This story is 30 years old, but Judge Curtin Barry, Crazy Barry, dies at the end, and Dredd stands over the body and says, "It's a pity we had to do this, Judge Curtin, because you were a pretty good judge. Mo, on the other hand, ... which is obviously, you know, it's a great final line, but Mike Mulcher picks it up quite rightly and says, hold on a minute. This guy's just been going crazy, murdering people left and right and stealing money from drug dealers and then going down to a non-extradition country in Latin America, where the judges are basically the biggest gang in town and they can do whatever they like. You buy the badge. And he's just gone buck wild down there. And Dredd's take is, hey, you're a pretty good judge. And same with Judge Manners. I mean, again, Manners is, you kind of get the feeling that the Justice Department is sort of doing the cost-benefit analysis. Well, you know, he's been 15 years in the academy and he's been 5 years on the street. He's been another 20 years on the street. Do we really want to, you know, get rid of that resource, you know, that we, you know, all the resources or sources that we put into that end product? Do we really want to throw that away? I mean, you could sort of see the way that Dredd kind of wants to keep him on board. And of course, and then, you know, we go into the real world and you have the Sarah Everard case from a couple of years ago, where the Metropolitan Police were, you know, discovered to have dragged their feet on that. And, oh, it's only one bad apple. And George Floyd and others in the United States, where the first thing that happened was the police union in that state came out and thumped a load of money behind the defense case of the four cops that were involved. You know, blah blah blah. You do wonder, God, this, you know, it's natural, I suppose, for clans to circle the wagons, I suppose. So is Wagner doing it? I mean, yes, he's doing it, and we know he's a sophisticated writer. But then again, he's doing what Wagner does. You know, he'll drop a line like that. You know, hey, Barry, it's It's a pity. You're a pretty good judge. Mo, on the other hand. So, yeah, I don't know. Could he... Because there was an earlier story where there was a judge went a bit crazy, and the end of it, in the maybe early 80s, he was just lobotomized. Or he was partially lobotomized, and the sort of bad part of his brain was cut out. And he was back on the street in 2 weeks. You know, those memories were gone. But, yeah, you sort of get the feeling that... And maybe it's even more prevalent now after Day of Chaos, where Justice Department has taken such a hit that, you know, and, you know, we've already heard a couple of stories where, oof, there's insufficiently trained judges. They're hitting the street because they're not doing 15 years in the academy. They're being rushed. They're doing 11 years in the academy or 10. Yeah, so, hey, oh my God, I know he beats people up, and I know that he smashed that car into that one guy once, but let's keep him on the street. And again, you know, when you hear the Metropolitan Police, their initial comment about the Sarah Everard murderer was to say, oh, it's one bad apple. You sort of think it's you know, of a, you know, it's in the same sort of strata as that, the same universe as that.
Yeah, I found it fascinating the way that John Wagner does this. I was asking you before we started recording whether it's John Wagner just so perfectly understands the character and the world, or whether we've just become accustomed to Wagner's voice and Wagner's writing that we always feel that way, that it's just like, oh yeah, he gets it.
Yeah.
Not an easy one to answer, but it made me think about that as we were reading this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, compared to the other author in the book, it's an easy comparison to make. But yeah, that's nasty. That's like, you know, Serena Williams playing, I don't know, me at tennis.
Yeah,
you know, it's not much of a not much of a match.
Let's, before we turn to the last story, let's just divert ourselves by talking about the artwork on easier grounds, perhaps.
Yeah,
because we have a multiplicity of artists in this book, several of whom are downstairs, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Any particular standouts or highlights that you'd like to mention in the artwork category?
Yeah, I mean, are we doing Grail Pages now, or should we...
No, we'll get to Grail Pages in a moment, but just in general.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think everything's really good, with the exception of Steve Yeol in the middle story. Again, kind of not really helped by some weird colouring, some very sort of 90s garish colouring. John Burns, of course, sensational. A very different take. He does the first Judge Manor story. Very old-fashioned and perfect take. And there's some beautiful action scenes and brutality in there. Special shout-out, I tell you, and then Paul Marshall, who is kind of a bit of an overlooked Dread artist. I really like him. And he does a great step-up job for the second Judge Manor story. But I'm really taken by Dave Taylor, who was supposed to be downstairs.
We
of course
thought he was going to be here, yes.
But unfortunately, I think he's broken his leg or something like that.
Oh, has he? Yeah, oh dear, yeah, sorry. Get well soon, Dave.
He does a really beautifully grim Mega City One in the Judging Ralphie story, which was just a one-off in the Meg. A really great take on Mega City One itself. And then particularly the real sort of scummier parts of Mega City One. I mean, there's a lot of wasteland in here. There's a lot of slums. There's but then with the backdrop, you know, this sort of Dubai skyline backdrop that Mega City One has. But, you know, he's really focusing on what's going on in the, not the undercity, but, you know, the real scummier parts of the city. And then he employs this very muddy, toned down color palette. There's a lot of bronzes, grays, very, very washed out golds, washed out reds. It's really fantastic. And then there's a couple of times where he does flashbacks to the Ralphie story. And in the first one, it's almost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 panels where he's telling the first, you know, the Ralphie story from Prog 119. And he's even done, which I think was Ron Smith. He's done the Ron Smith helmet.
I was going to say, he's done Ron Smith, hasn't he?
Yeah. Which is great. He's got the Ron Smith chin as well in the next page. So there's actually 9 panels of here. And that's totally washed out colours. That's grey and white, which is an homage, of course, to the early pre-colour days. Yeah, really, really fantastic stuff. Love that. I mean, we get 2-for-1 downstairs. The final story that we'll talk about later, Greg Staples knocking it out of the park, and then Pete Doherty, who is killing it on the colour, and actually told me what, because I got this signed downstairs this morning by Pete, and he was looking through it, and he pulled out one of the panels in one of the later pages and said, "Oh, I made a mistake there." And he goes, "I gave that guy a beard and he shouldn't have had a beard." So he's sort of between committing the crime and getting shot by Dredd and then being in the hospital, he grew a beard within half a day. But yes, I mean, it's difficult to call anything out. I mean, the way that this is early Chris Weston, so it's kind of, you kind of got to squint to see it's Chris's work. It's very unlike what he's doing now. And then the second part of the crazy Barry story, which is called Banana City, it's the first time we've ever been to Banana City, so I'm guessing Will Simpson has carte blanche to design the city, and then he has a great fun time designing the judges' uniform down there, the Ciudad Barranquilla judges, and the judges' bikes, and then we get to see the Hall of Justice down there, and you have a wonderful huge what is it, like a condor throne that the chief judge sits on, and the chief judge is wearing a headdress that is about the width of the room, fashioned in the shape of a condor, and it looks like it's been made of gold. And the city itself is all dive bars and Louvre doors, and I mean, it's, and you know, shadows falling across rooms. Absolutely sensational work from Simpson.
Yes, it is wonderful, isn't it? Yes, a multiplicity of wonderful artists. As you say, I'm very taken with Dave Taylor's depiction of Mega City 1 and the outskirts as well. But yeah, Will Simpson. You've mentioned it. Let's mention a famous story that finishes this collection, the Class of 79. Mm. Downstairs, we have got John Wagner, Greg Staples, and Pete Doherty. This story, again, we've got another judge gone bad, but in a completely different way.
Yeah, and a really interesting crime, victimless, I would suggest, done for very altruistic motivations. And then this is just a one and done, a 10-pager in Prog 2006. The way that he accepts, because of course Dredd catches up with him at the end of the story, the way this bent judge accepts justice is extraordinary. And it turns out it's called Class 79 because this is yet another judge who is in Dredd's graduating class that is unfortunately no longer with us.
Yes. Yes, Conrad from Space Spinner 2000 would remind me, in fact did remind me on Messenger, that from the Class of 79, most of the judges who graduated with Dredd have been either killed or incarcerated by Dredd as the years have gone on. Another example in this one, of course, Dredd just says, just a little discrepancy, nothing to worry about. But of course, Dredd has noted and is acting. And of course, we also get that great thing, which is Dredd visiting Vienna at the holidays with his clone brothers. And Dredd always looking completely out of place on somebody's sofa. Yeah, quite right.
And you think that was, because I think the first time I read this story was in, I might have read it in Prog 2006. And I certainly read it in Brothers of the Blood collected edition, and it's in there because it features a meeting between, yeah, it's a family reunion, right? Vienna's in the room, Rico's in the room, Dolman's in the room. They're having a Christmas cup of tea together, and you think, okay, that scene, which only lasts one page, six panels, has been kind of shoehorned in there just for Christmas, just for Vienna. But actually, it turns out Vienna gives Dredd a gift, which turns out to be crucial. And, you know, the B story fuses with the A story in the final frame, which is awesome.
Yeah. Terrific story to finish off the collection. So we've got these stories. Let's see. Let me remind myself. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is it 8 stories?
Yes, yeah. 8 stories, and 2 of which are 2-parters.
Yeah. So of the stories, which were your favourites? And then we'll move in towards the Giles Wright Platinum edition of this book, the other stories that might have made the collection.
I think I've got such a sort of nostalgic hotspot, sort of soft spot for Banana City.
Right.
Loved it at the time. Salivated for the next Friday for the next project to come out, and then salivated again for the third part to come out. I remember just adoring this story. It ran for 3 episodes. It was a cover for 2 of those episodes, and then there was a star scan in the third prog. So it was obviously well loved, I think, by the team at 2000 AD King's Reach. So I'm very taken by that. I really love the Rotten Manners story because it's so very different to the first Bad Manners story. This is, you know, his Manners is a very tough judge who will crack more heads than normal, than is, but still, you know, it's a permitted amount of head cracking. But if somebody gets in his way, he will take him out. He will kill him. And he does that in both stories, and it's handled so very differently. But also, you know, he's just a street judge who's very tough in the first episode. But in the second episode, you're talking about thought bubbles. There are a couple of thought bubbles in the second episode, because it starts out, he's just driving down the street on his bike, and there's a thought bubble just saying cruising. And then he says, I am a god to them. He's just, I'm cruising through the crowd. I am a god to them. A cruising thunderbolt that could explode all over them. I mean, he's gone from just being, or at least he has let us understand that he was more than just a tough bastard. He considers himself on a plane well above the citizens he is supposed to be, in whose name he's supposed to be delivering protection. And he comes down and he dispenses justice, and the first thing he sees is a democracy activist whose only crime is to distribute leaflets. That guy ends up, you know, having a hard time. And then, you know, he stops a mutant attack in the city. Did you have to kill them? Well, yeah, they're attacking the citizens. So every mutant ends up dead. And then there's this very gorgeous, very comely citizen who takes a fancy to Judge Manners, and Manners abstractly says, you know, and then I can, you know, because I'm a god, I can occasionally come down to earth and take what's mine, and occasionally I do. And you think, okay, well, he's just telling us this, that you know, just in the abstract. And then, of course, 3 or 4 or 5 pages later, he's in her apartment, you know, enjoying himself.
Yes.
So yeah, a brilliant, brilliant story. So yeah, I think my 2 favourites are probably, weirdly, the sequels to the to the pot. So I don't know whether that means there's a lot more character development, and then bang, you know, we're going off in a slightly different direction in both of those. But again, I mean, that, you know, Dave Taylor's depiction of Mega City 1 slum and wasteland is sensational as well.
You've mentioned that this was a collection aimed at the American audience, and that Mark Miller's inclusion might have been to get his name on the front cover as a name that would probably be more familiar to American audiences in 2012 than John Wagner's was. But you also hinted in your notes at the suggestion that there might be, if you had been editing the collection, you might have included some other stories or some different stories.
Yeah, I mean, if you will permit me to fantasize about a Giles Wright Platinum edition, I will say, yeah, I would include 2 more stories in here. So the Judge Manners, so yeah, Judge Curtin, Crazy Barry, gets a two-parter, and it's more or less, okay, here's this crazy judge, end of the story, oh, he got away with it. And the second part of the story is Dredd, you know, not allowing that loose end to stay loose. I'm wrapping that story up. And Judge Manners has the same, more or less the same story, that Manners has killed somebody in the first story, a witness to one of his crimes. And Dredd is scratching his chin saying, there's something not quite right here. And then the second Judge Manners story, I think, appeared about a year and a bit, about 13 months later, something like that. And Manners is naughty again. and Dredd catches up with him. Now, in between those two stories, there is actually a third Judge Manners story. It's called Flippers. Amazingly, Manners is not the main character. He is a cameo in it. He plays, there's a sting of some drug dealers, and there's some undercover judges are involved in the sting, and then there's a backup group of judges, of which Manners is one of them, that sort of form the B story, and then the two stories come together at the end. I would love to include that Manners story called Flippers in the collection. And you might think, oh well, Giles, you just like Judge Manners. It's not really. You're just not putting it in because it fits the theme. But actually, amazingly, it's about two judges that are bent. The two undercover judges are in love with each other, and the female judge is pregnant, and they have decided to bounce. And so their plan is, because the plot is, go undercover, pretend to be drug dealers, take the money, and we'll meet you. And they say, yeah, we'll do that. We'll also get our fake identities, and we'll get on the Starliner to wheresoever and take the money and start a new life. So it's about corrupt judges. And once again, like every other story in this collection, it's different. It is unusual. It is really interesting the way that they are, because of course they get caught, that they meet the justice that's been delivered to them. And Judge Manners is in there. So I would have that. I'd put that one in there. And then there's another wonderful story from way back, I think Prog 137, called Death of a Judge. Just a one-off. And it's a judge is killed on duty, and her partner gets the red mist and just goes in a beeline to deliver revenge on her, and then is taken out in the final two frames by Dredd. And then the perp says, hold on a minute, you killed a judge to protect me, a scumbag? And you know, Dredd delivers some line along the lines of, yeah, of course, you know, I'm a judge. This is the law. He broke the law. Now, the North American market obviously can't handle black and white, so somebody would have to colour that story.
Right.
I would have those two stories in there. I'd have leading the collection, Death of a Judge, which is ace, and it's a very old fashioned judge going bad story. It's, you know, temporary madness. It's revenge, and then boom, it ends violently. And then I'd put Flippers in between the two Judge Manners story. And I think you'd, you know, for a little bit extra printing, you know, the page count would be what? It'd be another 20 pages, and you'd have to pay a colorist rebellion. But yeah, I think that would make it superb. Hey, the standard edition that I'm holding in my hands is amazing. Go out and buy it. It's fantastic. It's also, weirdly, for a collection that features mostly Dredd as a supporting character, and it also just features bad judges, which is not really a theme of Judge Dredd, I think this would be a really good collection to give to a first-time Dredd reader, because you get all the ins and outs of Mega City 1. You get the ins and outs of the Academy of Law, the Justice Department, Dredd's metal, Dredd's intelligence. You get Detective Dredd, you get Kick-Ass Dredd, you get, I mean, there's a scene in Rotten Manners where Manners fires a shot to try and tempt Dredd into killing him. And he fires a shot that basically clips the side of Dredd's helmet. Dredd doesn't even flinch. It's an amazing collection. And yeah, I think you really could give this to a first-time reader and say, knock yourself out. And I think they would enjoy it.
Nice slim volume as well. Good stories. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. You're done in half an afternoon on this, aren't you? Yeah.
When Judges Go Bad is technically out of print, but you can find the copies fairly easy on the secondhand market, which is where I got mine. But I also noticed it's on the Kindle digitally for only $7.99, which seems like a bargain as well. So it is available. We've gone through the stories. We've talked about some of the themes that we picked out. The fascinating bit, as you say, that the judges go bad in completely different ways, which is fascinating. Let's do Grail pages, because you've picked a couple of pages from this collection that you would love to own.
Yeah.
Tell us about them.
Well, my first one is a cheat, because it's not a page that's in it.
Right.
But it is a star scan from the third Banana City story. And it is the picture that's on the cover of this collection. It's by Will Simpson. And there is a figure on here leaning up against the Lawmaster bike with a gun in his hand. And he's facing towards us. But his face is turned into profile. And the profile is clearly Joseph Dredd. He's got the grimace that nobody else can do. And he's got the chin that nobody else has. But we're in Uncanny Valley here because, you know, the uniform he's wearing is that of a Banana City judge. He's got this fantastic cow skull badge, these leather pants, these fantastic sort of vaquero cowboy boots. It's all leather and straps. And weirdly, I think when you see in the story, the costume design here is fantastic. When you see the story, Judge Curtin goes one step further with a little leather choker in real sort of, sadomasochism. But yeah, this picture is sensational. A great introduction. It's a very recognizable character, but, what's he doing in another city? And then slightly obscured by the title and the credits at the top of the page, you see this on the star scan. There's Simpson has done this amazing sort of 8-panel Andy Warhol-esque mural behind Dredd, where it's Judge Dredd face on in the Mega City helmet or as a poster on the wall behind him, replicated, which is, it's just sensational. It looks like it's painted, which was quite unusual, I think, back in the late 80s in 2000 AD, and it just looks totally brilliant.
Okay, well, fantastic. That is your first Grail page, the cover to this collection. But as you say, it was a star scan. We will definitely give you that one by Will Simpson. Fantastic. Now, you've got an interior page as well.
Yeah, I love a page that tells a story through, with minimal dialogue, through the images. So this is one of the later pages in Rotten Manners. It starts out black and white or blue and white. And it's two balaclavaed thieves have broken into a house, and they're broken in, and they're, you know, rifling through the house, and, you know, turns to color because a disembodied hand turns the light switch on, and a lawgiver comes out of, you know, enter stage left, and it turns out to be Judge Manners, who is getting up to no good with the very fulsome blonde that he picked up earlier. These two clowns have chosen just about the wrong apartment.
The worst apartment.
In all the hundreds of millions of apartments in Mega City 1, they've chosen the one that there was a crooked judge up to no good in it. But what I love about that is obviously he's been in flagrante, so he's not well dressed. He's hardly dressed. And I love the fact that the perspective flips to their point of view, and we see Manners coming into the room, and he hasn't got his helmet on, but Paul Marshall's done something wonderful with a shadow to occlude his eyes and the top of his head so you can't see him. And then the way he's standing, he is saving the blushes of the lovely girl behind him who's only got a pair of panties on. And then, final frame, boom, we get an intense close-up of just the lawgiver. And the badge, Manners. So there you go. Yeah, wonderful. That's very nearly a 3-act play told in 6 panels with minimal dialogue.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
It's ace. Yeah.
Wonderful storytelling by Paul Marshall.
Yeah.
Okay, so a Paul Marshall interior, a Will Simpson star scan that becomes the cover. They become your Grail pages from this collection. Fantastic stuff. I'll just very quickly mention, because you pointed it out to me, that the bookpalace.com, who sell original art and have got John M. Burns' original artwork, and of course John M. Burns, not all that long, passed away sadly. Here is a full page of Judge Manners backhanding a citizen. John Burns, who didn't really like doing the judge costumes, but seems to do a really good job of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard him say that he doesn't like doing much sci-fi, but then I would suggest there's way more sci-fi in Nicolai Dante that he loved doing than there is in particularly this Judge Manners story. But yeah, that full page, I mean, it's a full page action shot of Manners, as you say, backhanding this poor Juve, who has been hit with such force that he's totally off the ground.
Yeah.
And yeah, quite incredible. And then you've got the turn, because, you know, I wonder, maybe people who would glance at this page might presume that the judge is Dredd, but the face is turned just enough so you can make out the moustache, which is one of Manners' distinguishing features. And the torso is turned just so you can see the badge that reads Manners. It's amazing. What, I think £770 on,
is it? Right, I haven't bought it, so but it is up for sale at the moment.
It's actually discounted. I think it's something like £840, and they've taken whatever, you know,
right,
8% off or something. Nice. Like that. So it's snip.
Blimey.
Yeah.
John M. Burns art, available on thebookpalace.com. And we'll post all pictures of all these images when this episode comes out in a few weeks' time. Great stuff. Well, what a fascinating collection. I didn't really realise that, of course, it had been deliberately aimed at the American market, but it sort of makes sense now as well. But yeah, just again, there's another insight into the world of Dredd and Mega City One that this provides. I look forward to your next eclectic selection. We might be doing it remotely in a year's time rather than being at Lawless, but Great. It's been fantastic as ever, Giles.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, we are at Lawless. We've had a full day.
Mm.
Downstairs, great guests, great panels, great crowd. Highlights for you so far?
Well, highlights for me, I haven't quite got the whole thing, but I mean, it wasn't the reason I chose this. I chose this because this When Judges Go Bad is a phenomenal collection. But there's a lot of contributors downstairs.
Yes.
So I've got, I'll show you my inside cover. So I've got a lovely sketch, Dredd sketch by Greg Staples. I've got Pete Doherty signed. I've got John Wagner signed. I mean, as we discussed, Nick Percival was supposed to be here until he cancelled last night. And Dave Taylor was supposed to be here until he cancelled a month ago. I've also got lined up. I'm on Chris Weston's list.
Ooh, nice.
Didn't quite get there early enough, but he's going to do a little Mo sketch for me in the interior page. So when that's out, I'll send a pic and you can put it on the socials.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
But yeah, I've been it's a tough day for my back because I'm not staying in this hotel. I'm staying 15 minutes up the hill. So I had to drag. You know, but my poor satchel had 5 kilos of books in it this morning. I got as many of those possible signed and then went back up the hill and came back with another, so I don't know, let's say 4 kilos. And I'm doing it again tonight and then I'm coming back tomorrow with different books. But yeah, amazing. I mean, it's everybody is willing to draw little doodles inside books or on covers. Everybody's happy to chat. I mean, again, I just came back from chatting with Rob Williams for half an hour. And, of course, you know, Michael Carroll will talk your ear off, as will John Higgins. I mean, and hey, Pete Doherty couldn't have been nicer. I got, so what did we do 3 years ago? We did Fink.
Yes.
Fink Angel Legacy. So I chatted with Pete Doherty about character design, about that, like how much of a push were you given? And he said, well, I just had horrible lanky hair, and I came up with all the bandages and the stick and the bowler hat. He's great to talk to. And then everybody was worried, and there is an internal ticketing system this year to try and pull some kind of order into the queues of the big four,
what
they're calling, which is obviously John Wagner, Mick McMahon, Garth Ennis and Brian Bolland. Now, Brian Bolland's queues have been around the block all day. I need to take a lunch break, bless him. And he went to two panels. But Mick McMahon, I mean, I walked up to Mick McMahon. There was zero people in front of Mick McMahon after he'd had his lunch. And chatting with him and his wife for 15 minutes, and he signed all sorts of goodies. I think from Sue, who organises this, there is a limit of four signatures per person, but I have been to John Wagner three times and he's been, you know, virtually alone every time. I bought a couple of things from John, so I think that might have taken the edge off it, but he's super happy to chat. And he was talking about Button Man, for instance, being optioned again.
Yes.
So, which I think from his calculations is the fifth time it's been optioned. So I don't know whether anything's going to happen, but at least some film company or TV company is putting money into John's skyrocket, which is lovely. But yeah, and then Garth Ennis was a little bit late today. I think his train was late. And once again, I thought, oh no, this is going to snake around the block as well. But I let the lines, I saw you in the line, Eamon, earlier on, and I let the line subside. And once again, he came back from a panel, and I hadn't waited. I just drifted over when he sat himself down, and I was the number one. So it's amazing. It's I mean, I don't go to many cons, but I, as I understand them, they are, a lot of them just take place in featureless sheds, and you sit there and you just go, you know, you go through the sort of sausage maker.
Yeah.
And again, I was chatting with Simon Fraser today, who said, hey, when I go to cons in the States, I sit, nobody knows who I am, and I just sit, and I, you know, so it's good that I'm left alone, but the bad thing is I'm left alone, but the good thing is I can just get on with sketches. So I get a lot more sketches done. I'm not getting them done this time because, you know, people like me going into it, hello, can you sign these? But it's amazing. I mean, I am here all day tomorrow and I've got a load of books to sign, but I could have got them all done today. And that is with, I've had 7 people doing little sketches inside my collected editions. I pre-ordered a Mike Perkins sketch of Constanta in Fiends of the Eastern Front.
Nice.
Which is ace. But then everything else has just been done on the day. And I just said, hey, listen, here's a silver pen. Can you do it on the interior page? And everybody's done it. It's great. And some of them, I mean, who was it? A couple of guys. No, I don't want anything for it. Oh, all right, give me a fiver. All right, buy me a drink. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So yeah, but amazing pace, amazing friendliness. You know, as last year, I'm meeting people in the crowd, meeting people at the bar. You know, I'll come to the bar later tonight. I'm staying the night, Sunday night, so I'm going to be around. It's just nice to see people walking around the street. And yeah. Oh yeah, and then there's a couple of people who are not officially on the guest list who are just around. So I saw Henry Flint snuck in about an hour ago. So yeah, because he's obviously got friends here. So it's amazing. You know, I know you were talking to Sue on the previous podcast from last week, and you were saying that you've been to every single one, all 10. So you know this better than I do. But yeah, I'm ecstatic here, and it's so nice. And there's no, you don't have to be nervous, and you don't. Because everybody's, all the creators are just delighted that you're there, and because of the low numbers of the crowd, I think it's probably 350 people here. Nobody's getting stressed out or bombarded, and you know, there's unofficial rules: don't take 25 things to sign at any one time, if you can help it. And people are usually abiding by the rules, and it's brilliant. There's free ice cream as well, so
free ice cream. Yes, we've had free ice cream, and yeah, I mean, I do think Lawless is the loveliest convention, and that. There's a bit of a crush.
Asterix.
Yeah. Oh, Ennis can in.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry, Paul. But there is a, after the crush in the morning, this is the convention where you can get to speak to the creators and chat with them and talk about what they're doing and talk about what their work means to you.
Yeah.
It's lovely. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, great. So, I mean, I took a little wander around this year. The exhibition room contains Dave Roach's Best of British. So I think, as I understand it, it's all from his personal collection. And there's stuff, there's, you know, Daily Mail strips. There are stuff from the 60s, Modesty Blaze. There's Ballardinelli stuff. There's a couple of Carlos pictures. There's a John Burns page. There's some Dread. There's some Eagle. There's some Battle Action. There's a lot of stuff. And it's just, and it's laid out there as if Dave's just taken it sort of out of folders and laid everything out. I mean, that's just a delight to drift through. And again, we've all got 2 full days to view that. So it's not a crush. It's not like going to, you know, a Damien Hirst exhibition where you're ticketed, you're told you've only got an hour and 15 minutes in here and you're behind people. I mean, there were 4 people in the room when I was there and I just drifted through and took pictures of, you know, Max Bubba, you know, and it's amazing, amazing.
It's an astonishing room, an exhibition of David Roach's collection, and it's a literal Grail Page gallery.
Because, yeah, for sure.
We did it a little bit last year with Steve Dillon, but this year you can just go around and say, Yeah, I'll have that one, please.
Well, hold on a minute. Maybe I'm talking out of school here, but Stacey Whittle, and she said, oh, Eamon caught me going in there and said, you've got to pick out a grail page.
Yes.
So are you, that's what you should do.
Pick a grail page and take a picture and come and show me what it is.
Yeah. Great.
There's a Ron Smith page from the Blood of Satanus or Satanus story.
Yeah. He's trying to hang himself.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
Is that's your grail?
I think that'd be mine, just because I love Ron Smith.
Yeah.
But I mean, all the pages in there are mouthwatering. Yeah. And while we talk about mouthwatering original art, because of course, if you step into the creator's room, people are selling original art. Mm-hmm. And you and I have been playing a sort of resistance game as to who will crack first.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Well, what do they call the your helper in Alcoholics Anonymous?
Oh, yes. Your sponsor.
So we've been each other's sponsor, haven't we? I've seen a bit. I mean, I think, yeah, Chris Weston's stuff is lovely, and it's a delight to see. To see Weston's stuff there, but then the price tag is pretty high. Not surprising, given how long he takes to draw and how much detail there is in there. Tempted by a couple of Simon Fraser dreads. I'm really tempted by the other Simon who does Thistlebone.
Well, Simon Davis.
Davis. Yeah. And there's some lovely fully painted Thistlebones and Slains. And then I thought I was being a good boy, and I thought, okay, well, listen, I've got enough money for one page of original art, but if I don't come back with original art, where am I going to hang it? I've honestly got no room at home. I don't mind it. I'm getting all these sketches in Simon Clayton edition, so I thought, well, that'll do me. And then Peter Doherty's got at least 5 pages of Rat Fink original. Now, 2 of the pages are the very disturbing sexual assault that takes place, which I don't know if anybody could have that on their walls. But there's at least another 3 pages of there's the great multi-panel of Rat Fink and Dread tussling.
Wrestling,
and the denouement is that Rat Fink takes a bite out of Dread's neck. Tempted by that.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll perhaps get to talk about that on a future podcast as to whether our how we did on the second day with our resistance. Yeah, okay, we'll find out.
I'm shaky, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to fail.
Yeah, I think I am as well. Yeah. But yeah, I haven't so far.
What have you got your eyes on?
Well, either Peter Doherty, Rat Fink, or I don't have anything by Keith Burns so far.
Ooh, yeah.
Now, Keith Burns is a bit more expensive, but his Johnny Red stuff, of course, is wonderful. So I'm very tempted, but yeah.
Mm. Well, you've got that watch that buys things.
I have got a watch that buys things, but for me, by accident, yeah, on purpose, yeah. Giles, it's been great as ever. We've had a great day. We've had a great recording now about another Judge Dredd collection. And we look forward to Sunday at Lawless.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much for doing it once again. And as I say, we might be doing it remotely next time. But
Always a delight and a double delight that I'm here. And this time I really have I've flown in from Dubai for 6 days for Lawless. I'm almost 6 days, I'm in Bristol for 3. Which sounds preposterous to say that, but most indulgent thing I've ever done in my life, I think. But my God, the guest list this year was unmissable.
Astonishing.
Delighted to be invited back, Eamon, and totally digging it that we can do live.
And we're going to adjourn to the bar now and wet our whistles.
Awesome.
Which is the next plan. But until then, thank you to everyone for listening to me and Giles on Mega City Book Club. Find all of the links at megacitybookclub.com. Follow the podcast on all the social media platforms to see some of the images we've been talking about, including possibly some of the little dread sketches that Giles has been collecting. We are on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Blue Sky, Mastodon, the 2000 AD forums. We're probably on a brand new social media platform, which is called Chowder Powder, that I've just made up. And
that one is based, that's a tax... The tax base is Banana City, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, probably again at Lawless, it's goodbye from me and...
Farewell. Lawless FM, live from Bristol.